Karanodakshaya Vishnu. From his skin holds innumerable universes have sprung up. In each and every universe, the Purusha enters as the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. He is lying within the half of the universe, which is full with the water of his body. And from the navel of the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu has sprung the stem of the lotus flower, the birthplace of Brahma, who is the father of all living beings and the master of all the demigod engineers engaged in the perfect design and working of the universal order. Within the stem of the lotus, there are 14 divisions of planetary systems, and the earthly planets are situated in the middle. Upwards there are other better planetary systems, and the topmost system is called Brahma Loka or Satya Loka. Downwards from the earthly planetary systems, there are 7 lower planetary systems, inhabited by the Asuras and similar other materialistic living beings. From the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, there is expansion of the Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who is the collective Paramatma of all living beings. He is called Hari, and from him all incarnations within the universe are expanded. Therefore, the conclusion is that the Purush Avatar is manifested in 3 features. First, the Karanadakshaya, who creates aggregate material ingredients in the Mahat Tattva. Second, the Garbhodakshaya, who enters in each and every universe. And third, the Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who is the Paramatma of every material object, organic or inorganic. One who knows these planar features of the personality of Godhead knows Godhead properly, and thus the knower becomes freed from the material conditions of birth, death, old age and disease, as it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In this slok, the subject matter of Mahavishnu is summarized. The Mahavishnu lies down in some part of the spiritual sky by his own free will. Thus he lies on the ocean of Karana, from where he glances over his material nature, and the Mahat Tattva is at once created. Thus, electrified by the power of the Lord, the material nature at once creates innumerable universes, just as in due course a tree decorates itself with innumerable grown trees. The seed of the tree is sown by the cultivator, and the tree or creeper in due course becomes manifested with so many fruits. Nothing can take place without the cause. The Karana ocean is therefore called the causal ocean. Karana means causal. We should not foolishly accept the atheistic theory of creation. The description of the atheist is given in the Bhagavad Gita. The atheist does not believe in the creator, but he cannot give a good theory to explain the creation. Material nature has no power to create without the power of the Purusha, just as a Prakriti or woman cannot produce a child without the connection of a Purusha or man. The Purush impregnates and the Prakriti delivers. We should not expect milk from the fleshly bag on the neck of a goat, although they look like breastly nipples. Similarly, we should not expect any creative power from the material ingredients. We must believe in the power of the Purusha, who impregnates Prakriti or nature. Because the Lord wished to lie down in the meditation, the material energy created innumerable universes at once. In each one of them, the Lord lay down. And thus all the planets and the different paraphernalia were created at once by the will of the Lord. The Lord has unlimited potencies, and thus he can act as he likes by perfect planning, although personally he has nothing to do. No one is greater than or equal to him. That is the verdict of the Vedas.
A part of the Purusha lies down within the water of the universe, from the navel lake of his body across the lotus stem, and from the lotus flower atop the stem, Brahma, the master of all engineers in the universe, becomes man. Mujana timidam dasya janagana sulakayam shatru smritam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manavisam shabitam jena bhutale sayamukha karamaya dadat gita parantikam shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri avidigarara shri vasadi gaura bhakta vinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare. So I've been giving class every morning. Let's have a discussion group this morning. I can start the discussion. One interesting point is, Prabhupada says here, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, one who knows the three primary features of the person of God knows God and Prabhupada, and thus the knower becomes freed from the material conditions of birth, death, old age, disease, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. So where is it that's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that one who knows these three Vishnu features becomes free from birth, death, old age, and disease?
Janma karma.
Yeah, what? Janma kama cha me divyam evam yo vedi tattvatah bhaktane nomadanana naiti mam iti sovina. One who knows me in truth, by birth, by activities, he doesn't have to take birth again, this material, when he comes to my abode. So this is the one who knows Krishna in truth means he knows all of these features of Krishna as well. We'll read later in this chapter how Krishna is the source of all these different incarnations. Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam. So if we know Krishna, then we'll have to know the different features of the Lord. So the materialists say that these things are just happening by chance. So that's what the Prabhupada said. They have no clear idea. A big bang. Well, what is it? What does that mean? It's not clear. There's no clear. So here, the clear description is being given of the Lord and how He creates by His glance and so on. Okay, anyone else like to comment?
One point in this, in the translation and purport, it is described clearly that about the planets of the demigods and how they come into being, and it is also described that this entire material universe is just a small part in the entire spiritual sky, basically coming from the Mahatattva. So one point is, we see like so many people who worship the demigods, if they understand this, that all the demigods are basically situated in that stem, which is actually very temporary. And it is a very like small part of the entire spiritual sky. So what is the use of worshipping the demigods? And in Bhagavad Gita it says that if you worship the demigod, you go to the planets of the demigods. So even if someone is situated in Brahma Lok, it is so temporary that if you compare it to the entire spiritual sky. So
that's a good point. I've been reading the Brihadaryavatamrita where Gopa Kumar, he goes to these different planetary systems and he sees, and he becomes Indra, he even becomes Brahma. But then he, because he's a devotee of Krishna, he's always never satisfied. So now, just to the point where he's in Vaikuntha, he's transcended all the material worlds, he's passing, on his way up, he sees it, he feels ashamed. How can I be attracted to those opulences there in the material world? They're so meager, it's like you're saying. Interesting, when I was reading last night, the same point was there about that we were making yesterday about how Bhishma and Arjuna and who was it, Yudhisthira, with the gambling. So it mentions there that Yudhisthira, one of the reasons he got involved is just to show us that gambling is bad. Another example that was given was Bharat Maharaj. He was already in this bhava stage of pure devotion. But he became attached to the deer, to the fawn, this baby deer. And because of that, he had to take the body of the deer. So he was a very advanced devotee. He had given up his family, his kingdom, everything, and gone to devotional service. So one of the reasons is they're teaching us, don't become attached to anything on the material side. So, of course, become attached to a fawn is not as difficult to become attached to a child. Become attached to a child is very easy. And we should, of course, we have to care for the child, but if we become overly, a little bit more, then, even in the Bible it mentions we shouldn't have inordinate affection for anyone. Because then, that means we're not giving our real love to God. If we love God, fully love Krishna, then naturally we'll have affection for all God's creatures. And as a service, the mother, of course, has to take this service, that's her service to Krishna, to care for the child. But it still should be done in a somewhat detached way. At least the father has to be detached.
So how do you see that line? How do we actually...
Yeah, therefore the father should guide it. Now you're becoming too attached. Why are you spoiling this child? There's a thing even a psychiatrist called, they're called smother love. Famous Jewish mothers, they love their boy so much that the boy is afraid to do anything. No, no, don't go in here. You might get hurt. Poor boy, you got.
so-called love, but it just smothers the child. They can't learn how to be themselves.
But sometimes when it's like my mother, she never shows she like from the beginning, and we grew up in a temple, so we always had to eat prasad that was cooked by devotees. Sometimes my mother would cook, or sometimes my father cooks, but mostly it's just dependent on the temple. Like, whatever everybody eats, we eat. She doesn't do anything specially for us. So my brothers, especially 2, 3, they only think that she's not doing anything for us. So they think
wasn't changing your diapers. That's a big job, right? You must know.
Yeah.
It's a stinky job.
So that's what they think, that just cooking is everything. I tried to tell him, you know, it's not just that.
I know it's quite clear. Your brothers and sisters?
I don't have any sisters. I have 4 brothers.
Oh.
So my eldest brother and the second brother.
The brothers are thinking that the parents are not doing anything for them.
Yeah.
Because everything is supported by the temple they are living in.
So that's good. So they can be detached. They can realize that actually it's Krishna's doing everything. Krishna's arranging everything. And in this way, they won't have that Sneha Bandhana. That's what Prahlad calls it. Narada Muni in his previous life, with the son of a maidservant, and she was the only parent that he had. What's wrong?
He has a call and
Leave her get it. So, he was, when his mother was bitten by a snake, he took that as a... What an attractive feature you're being offered. He took it as the will of the Lord that he would be free from this bondage of mother. So you can quote to your brothers that verse and say, why do you take it like that? You should. And he took it as an inspiration. He said, wow, now this is the grace of the Lord that I'm free from the bondage of my affection, my natural affection for my mother, which is a bondage in a way. Too much attached, just like a ditch. He's got that problem. I mean, I see it from my perspective. It becomes a problem. Because you feel like that, I have so much duty, obligation, and I have to take care of my mother. So he took it as his mind, okay, now I'm free from that obligation and let me just worship the Lord. So why can't your brothers take it like that? Instead of being resentful, they should say, wow, this is my good fortune that I was brought up in the temple, so all I had to do is depend on Krishna.
But doesn't that require
a
certain maturity?
Yeah, it does. It does require some maturity. But you can preach to people to bring them to that stage of maturity. Give them the knowledge so that they can become mature instead of remaining as a child. In a way, and resentful. That's a child's mentality. That, oh, you owe me something, you didn't give it to me, therefore I'm going to be unhappy. Why not just take everything? Tateno kambama, whatever happens is, if we see it as coming as the arrangement of the Lord, then we can be very quickly qualified. It's mentioned there that if one takes that, has that mentality, then he becomes the rightful inheritor of the kingdom of God. If one keeps that one verse, Tateinu Kambam Manashikshu.
Yeah.
Tateinu Kambam. From the core of the heart, one should, I think it's 11 candles. So, Prabhupada says this verse is applicable at all times and all circumstances. So they may not be mature enough to understand it. But then you just keep on preaching that point. Gradually they'll become mature, they'll understand it. So preach to your brothers and sisters. Why not be like Narada Muni? And it is, actually. It is. Why not see it? That Krishna was offended when he was bringing me up. Then I should appreciate Krishna. He's my real mother. Bhakti Vinod says, Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Doya, that he's, Krishna is my brother, Krishna is my father, Krishna is everything. So they can see like that, yeah, Krishna is actually my mother, not this other jiva. It's like when Chichuketu, when he lost his child, then the child came back, right? Whose father are you? In this life you were my father, in the last life you were my enemy, you know that. This is, but it is, it requires some maturity, to understand the truth, to actually realize it. But it's our philosophy. Or not,
But it's also not easy, like, I still feel very attached to my mother. And then I know, I know that.
But then why not see that as your karma? Because of your karma, you've had that particular mother, which is true. And you were born in that circumstance. But instead of seeing the bad side of it, you see the good side. I was born in a devotee family. I was raised in a temple. Now I have a little attraction for chanting Hare Krishna, doing bhajan and so on. So take it as a, you know, there's always some good. We're all coming from the material side. My mother was an alcoholic. So what's the use of it? I asked Prabhupada about that. I said, my mother has a problem with drinking. And she said, you cannot control your mother. Vedic culture, the son should control him. Out of love, he should give her to give up those bad habits. When he said that, I think, are you crazy? That woman, you know, I couldn't control her. Now, well, actually, my brothers and sisters tried also, but when my father died, she started drinking. So what to do? What's the use of wringing your hand? Oh, I had it. But it's your karma. You got that mother. So own that. Take responsibility of that, and then you can forgive them. Actually forgive them. Okay. That's, you know, that you didn't raise me properly, that's your problem. You're going to have to account for that. But I'm not going to, you know, remain hung up because, I'm not going to become neurotic because of that. Well, I should go on in Krishna consciousness.
Mom!
You too, you can go on in Krishna consciousness. But you better be
here.
Mom! The center of attention. You find that verse?
No.
How can you find it? Word by word?
Yeah, well, I just type
it. Then, okay, the translation?
I can type either Sanskrit or English word.
Oh, I'm not sure how to spell the Sanskrit. T-A-T, Tate, T-E, Tate Nukampan, Nukampan,
Nukampan.
Oh,
we were talking the other night about something similar.
It's a little
hot
in here, please.
Oh, that's
a...
Yeah.
Okay,
we were talking
the other night?
Yeah, about, you know, sometimes we think that devotees, other devotees, they, you know, they don't do right things. And we know for sure that it's not right. And, you know, and then the problem arises, on the other side, we may not be in the position to correct them. Or, you know.
Well, that also is a time and circumstance thing, according to relationship. Yeah, that everybody has to struggle with that. Even Prabhupada, you know, sometimes he would see, okay, my disciple is not ready to hear this lesson, so he would just tolerate it. But then if he became closer to him, more advanced, then he would bless you. So that depends on the circumstance and how, what is it the person. In other words, we should try to be constructive, not counterproductive. We give an instruction, then we want that person to benefit from it. But instead, if they become resentful of it, then maybe, you know, we have to learn, well, that was, you know, what's the use of doing that? It's counterproductive.
What should be our internal attitude?
Our internal should be that we care for them. We have affection for them. We're doing it out of affection. So that's what raises it. You know, do we have any malice in our hearts? Are we actually their well-wisher? Or do we want to show that we're better than them by taking the role of the teacher? To raise your edge. In the material world, everyone is masochistic or sadistic. We We either torture ourselves or we torture others. That's why. Because it starts with Krishna. We're trying to torture Krishna. How is that? Because Krishna is actually, his position is to enjoy us, but we don't allow him to. So we're trying to torture Krishna by depriving him of his right to enjoy us. We're the Prakriti, we're the female. Krishna is the Purusha. So his natural position is to enjoy us. But we, no, no, I'm not going to let you enjoy me. Just like the wife will say, no, no, I have a headache. I don't want to have, I don't want to let you enjoy me now. But with Krishna, it's an offense. With the wife, it may be, maybe the guy's lusty or something. But with Krishna, so we're offensive to Krishna. We're causing trouble to ourselves just to not allow him to enjoy us. So that's kind of a masochistic. And then we project to others, we're sadistic. We take pleasure out of seeing them suffer. So we should examine our hearts. Are we actually the well-wisher of this person? Prabhupada used to sign every letter, you're ever a well-wisher. Are we the well-wisher of this person? Then we can take a risk to instruct them. And then we have to see, well, was it worthwhile instructing them? Maybe they'll, if they reacted kind of neutrally, that's good. I mean, maybe they'll think about it later and have some effect on it. But if they become, envious and then retaliate, then they better not, be indifferent to them. Like Haridas Thakur, when that Brahmin insulted him, then he saw that this person is not ready to hear Bhagavad Dharma, so he just became indifferent. And the others became offended. Oh, how could you offend? But he didn't feel insulted. He just saw that this person is not ready to hear the message at this time.
So I think another thing that maybe we shouldn't be also attached to the thought that they will change after we do something, right? We should do it out of beauty, having all this nice, eternal, all this, care for them and,
Yeah, so that.
But without saying, okay, I just do, this is my duty to try to help them.
But if we have to see if we actually helps them or not. We should be intelligent to see, well, we can say something at the wrong time and what's not going to help them. Depends on how advanced they are. And so there's a dynamic there. Generally, because we're preaching, we take a little risk. We take a little risk to preach, just like you're going out to sell books. So some people don't like it, but you take that risk. Well, maybe these people will think that we're a cult and so on. But Prabhupada said, no, we should take a little risk for preaching. If the book's still out, some people may not like it. When we ask for money, like one devotee, Prabhupada, I remember, came in front of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was asking, so how's Sankirtan going? Prabhupada was the leader of the bus. Prabhupada said, it's going okay, Prabhupada, but people don't like when we ask for money. They just take the book, they run out of free. When we ask for money, they don't like. And Prabhupada immediately said, they won't like so many things. They won't like when we tell them that they should close the slaughterhouse. We have to take some risk. But we don't take too much risk, and we have to be, intelligent about our position. If we take so much risk, we can fall down. And we don't go take a risk and just go, let's go preach to the most fallen, the prostitutes in the bar. We don't go and say, yeah, you're the most fallen, you should get Lord Chaitanya's mercy, come. Because we're not so, but Prabhupada could. Sit in a room full of naked women, I won't be disturbed. But we don't invite the Brahmacharis to go with you. Yeah?
I wonder that sometimes, let's say in my example, I feel like I should do some kind of preaching and distributing books. Preaching is not such a problem, but distributing books is such a problem for my mind. But on the other side, I know it's good and no problem to preach.
And if you do, you feel better, right?
I feel much better.
You meet some nice people.
Yeah. But to what extent, my question is to what extent, because it's almost like in the beginning it's like a torture almost for me.
Torture.
To push my afterwards the nectar, but in the beginning it's just so hard. So to what extent we should push ourselves to do things which seem to be like almost not, this is not me, this is not my nature to do, I'm thinking, and I should do something which is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering to what extent I should push myself to do certain things. You know, certain
things. I understand the question. Everybody has that dilemma or something, you know. Generally, like I say, we should push ourselves to some degree. Because otherwise the mind will become our guru. So the instruction of the spiritual master is there to try to fulfill that. But if it becomes, you know, then it becomes so much of a torture that every day then you can see some other service there also. You can assist someone else or someone, find some other way. It's like now Vaisheshika is encouraging people to preach from the table. To go in front of the Indian store and show them that table.
Pushing your thing in your mind, but sometimes you fear that it may, you know, just retaliate and then say, okay.
So that's why, then try an alternative method. Set it on the table. Then you're not going, people are coming to you. Yeah.
I found it was.
Oh, you
were. That day you come up to some shaman. Vunjana evatma kritam vipaka ridvag vakuri vidadhan namaste jiveta yo mukti kare sadaya bhav. Sanfisha, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances within his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim.
Bhagavatam ki jai.